My name is Casey. I was raised in Kansas, and I love my parents very much, but I've always known that I was adopted. Even though I'd asked my adoptive parents many times, they refused to tell me any information about my biological family. They said it was best that I never found out where I came from. As soon as I turned 18, I went down to the city government building and put in an official request to unseal my adoption records. It took less than 10 minutes for the clerk to print out my file and hand it over. All my life I'd waited to find out about my biological family, and I'd finally gotten the information I wanted. The record showed that my birth mother was named Leia. The birth father section had been left blank. I went home and got on my computer. Without telling my parents what I was doing, I got online and started searching for Leia. It took a while, but I eventually found an address. This was during the summer, right after I'd graduated high school. I went downstairs and told my parents that I was going to spend the day at my friend's house. They didn't suspect that I was going behind their backs. "No problem," my mom said. "Eat something first." She gave me a sandwich, made sure that I was wearing sunscreen for the day, and then sent me on my way. As I left, I started to feel really guilty over what I was doing. These were my real parents. They raised me, and they loved me more than anything. Biology didn't matter. But at the same time, I couldn't deny my curiosity. I needed to find answers. So I drove across town to my biological mom's address. She lived in a rundown trailer just outside the city. It was in a neighborhood I'd never visited before. Honestly, I didn't feel safe there. I knocked on the trailer's door. My birth record showed that she would have only been 34, but she looked much older. She must have had a really tough life. When I looked at her, though, I saw that her eyes looked a lot like mine. This was my birth mother. "Leia?" I asked. She seemed instantly suspicious.
"Whatever you're selling, I don't want any," she said.
She started closing the door.
"Wait," I said. "My name's Casey. I think I'm your daughter."
Right away, her whole demeanor changed. Her face brightened into a big smile, showing that she was missing a few teeth. She burst forward and wrapped me in a big hug.
"Casey,"
she whispered.
Come in.
She pulled me in. The inside of the trailer was even dirtier than the outside. There was a weird chemical smell in the air, and I wondered if she made some kind of inside. We sat on her torn, dusty sofa. She texted something on her phone, and then she started asking me about my life. I told her about all the sports I played in school. I said that I was planning to go to Kansas State on a volleyball scholarship. I told her about my boyfriend and my favorite movies and pretty much anything else I can think of. She seemed impressed. She said I had grown to a beautiful young woman and she was very happy for me. Then she got a sad look on her face and asked me about my adoptive parents. I answered her questions, but I didn't feel too comfortable telling her too much about them. This was about me and her. So I asked her about her job and any other family she had. She said she lived alone and didn't have any other kids. She was on welfare after getting fired from Dairy Queen, but she was optimistic about finding a new job soon. I appreciated how honest she was, so I decided to ask her the big question. "Why did you give me up?" She couldn't look me in the eyes.
"I assumed you knew," she said.
"Is it because you couldn't afford to have a kid?" I asked.
"Of course not,"
she shouted. It was the first time her voice was anything but pleasant.
"If I'd had a normal child, I would have kept it. I am a religious woman."
I had no idea what she meant by that. I was normal. And what did her religion have to do with anything? "Why did you think I wasn't normal?" I asked. She grabbed my wrist and twisted so that we could both see the palm of my hand. That was where I had a small burn scar from when I was a little kid. Leia stared at the scar.
"Oh my God,"
she said.
"They removed it."
Then she looked me right in the eyes.
You have no idea who you are, do you?
I pulled my hand away from her. I was starting to think that I'd made a mistake in coming here.
Casey,
she said,
you were born with a birthmark on the palm of your hand. It was in the shape of 3 sixes.
What?
I gave you up for adoption because you're the Antichrist. I didn't have the heart to kill you, but now that you've returned...
And that's when I noticed that 2 men had entered the room. I guess Leia had texted them right when I'd arrived. All this time we were talking, she was just distracting me, waiting for these men to come. They each had daggers. What happened next was a total blur. It was like I left my body completely. But what I do know is that I hit Leia right in the face and she fell onto the floor. Then I pushed those 2 men and raced out of there, jumped in my car, and drove all the way back home. My parents were shocked to see me.
Are you okay?
Mom asked. I told them everything that Leia had said.
Am I the devil?
I asked. Both Mom and Dad burst out laughing. They came over and gave me a big hug.
Oh, honey,
Dad said. That burn mark was from when you accidentally picked up a hot coal when you were a baby. It was at a barbecue. Your birth mother is completely insane. Instant relief washed through my body.
Thank God. It was all just the ravings of a mad woman.
But the more I think about it, the more this doesn't make sense. How did she know about the burn on my hand? Who were those other men who came for me? I still don't have answers to those questions. I keep thinking about them. Am I really just a normal kid, or are my adoptive parents lying to me?
There was something about me that my husband never understood. But after so many years of being with Xavier, he had come to learn how to accept my quirks and likes, even the ones he never seemed to understand. That was probably why we were married for so long. He was so understanding. One of those things I liked that he didn't understand was shopping. It didn't have to be clothes shopping or even buying skincare and makeup products. It didn't have to be an expensive Chanel for it to make me happy. It could be something as simple as grocery shopping at the nearest shopping mall to us, which happened to be Costco. Xavier and I lived in a small and sleepy town that people often forgot existed. A town that made everything seem like a fever dream. It was beautiful to live in our small town of Florine, but it could be equally scary, as it could be really quiet. It reminded me of a dream I had only this morning, which was the reason for my impromptu shopping as a form of therapy. In my dream, I woke up and realized that I was the only one in existence. I couldn't find Xavier, and the old lady next door wasn't rocking on her chair. Even our cat's meow was gone. In my dream, I searched everywhere for any sign of life, and I couldn't even find a squirrel or an ant. It was a terrifying nightmare that had me shaking and sweating when I woke up. I grabbed my car keys the moment I woke up, kissed Xavier, and told him I was going shopping. He bade me goodbye, told me he would be off for work, and let me know that he needed a few things too. So I wound up at this Costco branch, which was buzzing with people. The chill of my nightmare lingered, and I couldn't shake it off, even as I reminded myself that it was only a dream and not real. I walked down the aisles, picked out random things, and added them to the cart. It was therapeutic, and it was already working, because I felt much better as I wheeled my cart away. I couldn't help but notice there were more people than usual today. I marveled at it. There only seemed to be people streaming in, and nobody left. And I have sworn I saw things happen more than once. Like a sort of deja vu. Like the little girl in the pink jumper who hurried to add Fruit Loops into her mother's cart, and her mother taking it out. Then, the little girl's face turned red, and her mother finally agreed to get it. Mommy, I want it, please! The little girl would wail. Fine. The mother sighed as she plopped the Fruit Loops back into the cart. But I'm not getting anything else. It seemed to be happening in a constant loop. I had to blink several times to make sense of my reality, and even then it was a bit foggy. Was I still asleep? I tried to pinch myself, and I felt my skin hurt from it. I was awake. I decided to shake it off as I made my way toward the cake mix aisles and picked up a few boxes of pancakes and cake. I realized my muscles were cramped as I walked. I could barely take fast steps, and the world around me seemed to slow down. I didn't get it. I tried to shake it off, but it wasn't possible. I wanted to leave, but Costco wasn't helping as I began to feel even more weirded out than I was after the dream. I went to the ice cream aisle to get my favorite flavor, and then perhaps I would return home and cuddle up in front of the television and try to forget the weirdness of the day. Another loop happened at the ice cream aisle. This time around, there were two teenagers arguing over the best flavor. I don't think there's any flavor better than vanilla. It's basic, but it's the best, one of the girls said. It's the Oreo one. Then they went ahead and got the flavors, but they returned and it happened all over again. I was losing my mind. I was sure of it. I tried to talk to the girls, but they didn't respond, almost like they didn't hear me. I looked around and tried to speak to others, but no one spoke to me. I wanted to cry, but the tears didn't come out, and the world blurred around me. I abandoned the cart in the middle of the store and ran for the exit door, but it felt like I was walking in water and my movements were slowed, and the exit door suddenly vanished. I looked around and people that seemed to have filled up the entire store seemed to vanish right before my eyes. One by one, they all disappeared, and it was just me, alone once more in a store so large and an exit nowhere to be found. I felt trapped inside. I couldn't even speak or scream for help. Who would I call when it seemed as though I were the only one around? And yet, I did try to scream. I tried, but the sound didn't come out, and my mind spun. A crippling feeling took over me, and I felt as though I were drowning in my own body. I felt pain all over my body, and soon, Costco began to fade away around me, and I was met by a new reality. Metal, the sharp scent of something antiseptic, and the loud ticking of a clock against a wall. I closed my eyes shut and tried to wake myself from this seemingly endless nightmare. I wanted to return home and never sleep a wink again. I forced my eyes open, and I met a stranger looking down at me. He was wearing a surgical mask, but this wasn't the hospital. I knew because the walls were made of metal, and I was strapped against a chair. The weird gadgets around me scared me. I didn't want to be here for another second, and yet I was trapped. The man looking down at me turned towards another man and said to him, "Operation Costco is a complete fail. The subject only lasted in the simulation for 3 minutes. My mind was spinning. I didn't understand what they said. Was this all a simulation? What were these men doing to me? I felt helpless as I watched someone hand this man with the mask a freakishly looking injection that looked like it hurt more than anything. I am injecting the suspect with a stronger serum this time around, and hopefully, this will be the one that keeps her in a dream loop for eternity, the man said. My blood ran cold, and I felt terrified and scared of what the man meant. I tried to struggle against the straps that held me in place, but my limbs were jelly and I couldn't move. I watched helplessly as I was injected, and soon, my world went blank. And then, I breathed in the fresh air around me. I was in the middle of Costco, and I had never been happier. I strolled through the aisles, happily looking for groceries we needed at home, and I watched the people around me go on with their day. Although I was happy, and Costco seemed like a paradise, I couldn't shake off the odd feeling that something was wrong, and I didn't know why.
My name is Oliver. Last summer, I was staying with my parents while my landlord fumigated my apartment. I could have stayed with my girlfriend Tiana, but I really hadn't seen my family in a long time. Besides, I knew that my little brother Benjamin was coming back home after his first year in college. I figured this would be a good opportunity to reconnect with all of them. I arrived in the afternoon and got to catch up with my parents. We talked for a couple hours and I was happy to know that they seemed to be doing well. They asked about Tiana and about my job, and I asked them about their church friends. I tried to ask how Benjamin was doing, but I guess he hadn't talked to them that much in the past year either. He ghosted all of us, apparently. But I guess that's to be expected. It was his first year out of the house, after all. Eventually, Mom went to the kitchen to start dinner, and Dad and I watched football on TV. It was nice to be back home. It was relaxing. And then, Benjamin arrived. He looked about the same as before, though he was wearing these weird spiky boots and a trench coat, something he never would have worn before. But there was something else about him, a darkness in his eyes. He'd changed in the last year, but I didn't know how. I'd find out soon enough. He hugged me and asked how I was doing. I told him about my job and my girlfriend Tiana. He seemed pretty supportive, but then he asked if he could see a photo of her. I showed him, and his expression instantly dropped. "You're dating her?" he asked. "What's wrong with that?" I asked. I didn't think that she was out of my league or anything. We were both pretty good-looking people, but then I realized that his negative response was because my girlfriend was black. For the next hour or so, there was an awkwardness between us. Even Dad noticed, and he never noticed anything. As we ate dinner, Mom suggested that Benjamin and I get out of the house and catch up over drinks or something. I wasn't sure that was a good idea, but Benjamin loved the idea. He said that he discovered this awesome bar that would help me learn a bit about myself. I didn't know what he meant by that. So after dinner, Benjamin and I got in his car, and he drove me to this pretty shady area in town. He pulled up to this run-down bar that didn't even have a sign on the building. We had the only car in the parking lot. Everyone else had come here on motorcycle. "I don't know if I like this place," I said. "Trust me," he said. "You need to come here." I didn't want to let my brother down, so I followed him in. Right away, I knew I'd made a mistake. The place was filled with the sketchiest looking people. All men. Most of them had shaved heads. All of them had tattoos. Benjamin walked up to two burly guys at the bar and introduced me. They all said hello, but they looked at me like I was trespassing on their property. Then Benjamin asked me to take out my phone and show them my girlfriend's photo. I refused. I didn't know these people, and I certainly didn't want them to know anything about me or Tiana. Out of nowhere, Benjamin slammed me against the wall and stole my phone. He showed them the same photo as before, and all his buddies were horrified. They started lecturing me about the master race and bloodlines and the most horrific stuff. That's when I knew for sure this was a skinhead bar. Sometime last year, my brother had gotten infected by their twisted ideology. He was one of them now. Benjamin still held me against the wall so I could listen to his psycho friends without being able to escape. "Why did you bring me here?" I asked. "To knock some sense into you," he said. "Either you preserve our family name or break up with her. Or..." "Dude, no!" I screamed. "I love her, man. You're insane." He did not like being called insane. He started screaming a bunch of racist nonsense that he picked up over the last year. It was disgusting. And when he ran out of words, he pulled a switchblade out of his pocket and held it up to my cheek. He said that if I didn't preserve our family line, whatever that meant, he'd cut me so that no woman would ever find me attractive again. The two guys behind him just watched and smiled. I could tell he meant business. I could also tell he was not going to listen to reason. The only thing I could do was run. So I kicked him as hard as I could, right in the crotch. The knife fell out of his hand. All the other guys in the bar stared at me, but none of them moved. I raced out of there and ran all the way back to my parents' house because Benjamin had driven me there and I didn't have a ride. I knew that it was about a 20-minute walk, but because I was running the whole time, I got there in 10. As soon as I got inside, I ran to my parents in the kitchen and told them everything that happened. I must have sounded like a crazy person because the words just came out of me. When I finished, Mom and Dad stared at me for a long time. They looked at each other and then burst out laughing. "What's so funny?" I said. "He threatened me. He's a skinhead." My mom stepped closer and wrapped me in a big hug. "It's okay," she said. "Benjamin already told us what really happened." That's when Benjamin walked out of the other room. He'd gotten home before I did. I asked him what he said, and apparently he told our parents that I drank too much and started flirting with a girl who wasn't interested. When I got rejected, I started crying and ran out of the bar. "But that's not what happened at all," I screamed. It's okay," Mom said. "We promised not to tell your girlfriend." I kept trying to explain the truth, but no one would believe me. I guess the thought of me getting rejected seemed a whole lot more believable than my brother being a racist psychopath. Eventually, I stopped arguing with them and went to my room. I called Tiana and told her what happened, and of course, she believed me. That night, I left my parents' house and went to stay at her place. My family called me a bunch of times after that, asking if I was coming back, but I told them I would not step foot in that house as long as Benjamin was there. Since then, Benjamin went back to college, and who knows what awful kinds of stuff he's learning now. I've seen my parents a handful of times, but they still don't believe me. I still have no idea how to change their minds.
I had had many first days at work. Too many that I'd lost count. But I was at my desk on the first day at this new job when I'd noticed him. I'd already begun my work, typing away at the computer, when I saw someone, ginger-haired with a freckled nose under his heavy glass frame, stop by the door. His eyes had been dull, but lit, probably holding a smile before he'd come, and then it had disappeared when he saw me. I did not assume the strange situation an issue, but my heart dwelled in it long enough until I sensed him walk all the way from the door with careful steps until he arrived at his desk. I lifted my gaze the second time, and I flashed him a smile. His appearance turned quizzical, as though he was a scientist and I was an unwitting lab specimen which had caught his attention. I looked straight into his eyes for the brief moment, and I perceived his mood. It was confusion, and his perplexity corrupted my enthusiasm. I sought to put an end to it. "Good morning, mister," I said over the desk to him, and I waved for good measure. He sighed, and his eyes turned into a concerning ruefulness. "It's my first day here. I suppose you and I have yet to meet." He said nothing, as my words hung awkwardly unanswered between us both. I had nowhere to place my gaze, so I allowed them to wander shakily around the room. I looked back to my work, but his attention, which was still on me, made me uneasy. "I'm sorry," I apologized with a shaky stammer, recounting my friendliness, which I perceived was not something he appreciated. "I didn't realize you don't like to speak in the morning." "Do you like coffee?" he asked with a straight face. His question was frank, and his mien was earnest, almost defeated. I had the sense that he did not care for my answer if it did not apply to an end which his question has intended, so I studied his import for what this might mean. I looked at the door, and it had no clues for me. We were alone in the office, and all of the tension came on my shoulders. I felt the cold urgency of obligation come on me. "Yeah, I like a little bit of coffee when I work," I blurted and ran my fingers across the table. "You know, the numbers can be a little dizzying sometimes." He did not seem to appreciate my humor because his features remained vague. I cussed under my breath in irritation because I'd tried to appeal to him and he had not seen the sense in it. There was no charisma about him that I could say captured my attention. But I perceived something in those stern green eyes of his that kept my interests. His airs were simple, and his outfit matched the disposition which he seemed to put on. "Would you mind getting cups for us?" he asked, rather politely, the only time his voice climbed a higher tone since we'd begun to speak. Sure, I said. And then I thought of it and wondered why I had agreed to his instructions. I did not work for him. It was a rather odd request to make to your colleague whom you just met for the first time. My fingers twitched, and I sensed he knew something I did not. The feeling that I had given my position away so quickly made me sick to my stomach. I decided to play along with it, allow him to enjoy the promise of control for a moment. Do you know where to find it? He asked as I walked towards the door. I'd probably look around for it, I said to him. You know, Rob and I shared coffee a lot. It was a morning ritual of ours, he said just as I was about to step out. The one time we did not, he was dead by noon. Heart attack, they said. That's Rob's desk you're sitting on. That was weeks ago. I am so sorry, I muttered. No milk, please. And be stingy with the sweetener, he said to me. Carefully crafted information to shake me. I was given 3 weeks off to mourn my friend, and I'm not sure my buds would agree to too much of a new thing. I sniffed and marched off in thought. Something was off, and realizing it came with a forceful chill, which I could not shake off. I could sense the dread in his throat when he spoke, but I did not know what to make of it. I knew too little about the company's employees, and I'd only been hired because I'd proven myself at my previous job as one who could take care of things. I found the coffee maker quicker than I thought I would, and I pondered on his reason for carrying the guilt of his dead colleague so dearly. He would need to come to terms with Rob's death, I thought to myself. Those who had hired me wanted a clean job in the books. When the cup of coffee was full, I noted his cup and started my walk back down the aisle. My mind still remained plagued with thoughts even as I walked back, and it took me a minute to realize someone walking in front of me. Good morning, I said politely, holding the cups of coffee gently. Hey, good morning, the man said back. I caught his appearance, and in a strange way, I mused at how much he looked like someone who worked in the same office as me. My heart stopped cold, and the same panic which I hadn't felt in years made me numb. I stopped, and the man in front of me seemed to notice. He slowed and looked at me with the cups of coffee in both my hands. Are you new here? He asked almost nonchalantly. Yes, I said, and immediately I stretched out my hands. I suppose you work in the same office as me, and it struck me as something curious. You care for coffee? I cackled with light humor. He reached his hands out and grabbed the cup of coffee. He took a swig of it and continued the march. The other cup of coffee in my hand was useless. My mind wore itself out from racing so quickly. I rolled my tongue in my mouth as we continued to march. The clock of my mind did a small countdown as I marched in the company of this strange man towards the door, and my heart beat rapidly. I hated to think too much about work. I pulled the door open and we entered. The freckled, bespectacled man turned around curiously and looked at us with the phone to his ears red with passion. Who are you and why are you on my desk? The stranger asked the bespectacled man. Fuck! I cusped. My own horror drenched me with sweat. He was most probably the man who killed Rob, and I was being set up to take the fall for both murders. Ah! He cried, grabbing on his chest as he fell to the ground, writhing in pain. That was for me, wasn't it? The bespectacled man smiled at me as we both watched the worker grapple on the floor as the effect of the poison suffocated him. That was a good job you've done. It filled me with great fear and paranoia that my work had been carefully coordinated by a man who controlled me like a puppet. Even the knife I intended to stab him with did not seem so useful anymore. I'll send your fee across, he said coldly, grabbed his bag from the desk and walked away, leaving me with great fear at the power which he had held over me in a matter of minutes since I had seen him.